we don't actually have a quorum tonight. But we're not making decisions.
So this group, though, is going to make the decisions on what the sign ordinances are going to be with inside the city limits.
We will make a recommendation to the city council, and they will adopt the ordinance.
Okay, right.
Would you like to come up to the table?
Sure.
Yeah, why don't you come up?
There'll be a crowd.
Well,
you're looking at it.
And then it'll make it easier.
I like to see meetings.
Do roundtable discussion.
Mm-hmm. Can I give you names for the record, just so I have them on the tape?
Linda Stevenson.
Okay.
Edward Turner.
Okay, thank you.
We signed in. If you check me.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you very much. I guess we should do introductions because I don't know if everybody knows everyone. Do we all know everyone? Everybody comfortable? James Lewis, Deborah McMahon,
Linda Maggard,
Virginia Klassen,
Don Viner,
Patty Morgan.
Now we do.
Okay. Because there aren't a lot of people tonight, we're just going to kind of give you an overview of where we've come from and where we're going to. Both of these projects, meaning the comprehensive plan and the implementing ordinances, are funded by DLCD, which is the Department of Land Conservation and Development. So the city got two grants to get their city up and running as it relates to land use. And the comprehensive plan was locally adopted, and the county adopted their portion of what was needed and recognized Lapine's efforts in getting a comp plan going. That's at the state awaiting final approval. In the meantime, a grant was authorized to do implementing ordinances to make sure that the city has a framework of codes that it can use once adopted. And of course, the city council has to figure out how to fund staff to implement the ordinances. And that will be a discussion later on between the county and the city. So the ordinances that are underway right now, zoning, land division, which is how you split up land, outdoor lighting, my second one, I can't read it. Sign code, land use procedures, which are the guts of how you process a permit, and then a mitigation framework to begin the discussion of SDCs or systems development charges. And from those six things that we've drafted, if you guys want to talk about signs tonight, we can just jump right into that. But I'd like to have James go over what he's just handed out.
Well, what I just handed out was I tried to provide, we figured tonight was going to be a very high-level kind of meeting with whoever showed up to say, to give the background of what Deborah said, the comprehensive plan that was just adopted, and it has the goals and policies, kind of those broad, overarching, more general goals and policies of how Lapine will develop in the future. The implementing ordinances are the nuts and bolts. It's where the rubber meets the road. It contains the specificity, such as the setbacks and the uses allowed in the zone, the height limits, sign regulations. It is the actual criteria and the law that can be enforced. Comp plan is that kind of general, here's what we want to look like in 20 years. It's a 20-year document. And again, what I passed out was the background talks about very briefly the comprehensive plan process that we went through over the past year to year and a half. The land use codes and ordinances is basically telling you what I just told you, the implementing portion of it. And then I went through a brief description of what the specific codes are. And I did this in a very rudimentary fashion on the basis that we may have had somebody show up that doesn't know what a zoning code is for a sign code. And then ultimately, that in summary, what we're trying to do is we're trying to provide codes that implement the comp plan, but get more specifically to what the citizens of Lapine want rather than what's been in place through Deschutes County for the past 30 plus years.
And we heard that in the comprehensive plan. Every single meeting, we heard that we want a code that reflects our wishes, our local values, and we'd like to see that streamlined and customized for Lapine. And so the policies that you see in the comprehensive plan talk about the livability standards that people in Lapine are very interested in, open space, what happens on roads and how can we improve connectivity, all the things that kept coming up time and time again. And so in these rules or regulations, you're going to see things that are different than the existing county code because Lapine is taking upon itself its incorporation responsibilities. Mm-hmm. And that's why things are a little different.
This questionnaire, related to kind of the very general nature of tonight's meeting, since it was the first public meeting, I prepared a list of like 9 or 10 questions. It was very broad, asking in general, what are the most important factors that you have regarding land development zoning and with regard to signs or with regard to, say, if it's a new subdivision, what are your thoughts on lot sizes? Should they be bigger, smaller? Street width, should they be wider, narrower?
And we're talking just inside the city
limits. Just inside the city limits. Yeah. And the goal was that as we have subsequent public meetings, what we start to do is we take this information and we give people a general understanding that really that don't understand the process, and then start to get more specific as we get to subsequent meetings. Now being on the Planning Commission for a while, I remember when all of you started on the Planning Commission, we had some very general discussions, and now it's old hat, you know it all in detail. So you guys are there. That's what we wanted to do with the rest of the public, just kind of bring them along.
And stimulate some conversation.
Exactly. And so, you know, in a lot of public meetings, and, you know, as we get into these types of things, I say things that I play devil's advocate a lot to start that conversation and make people think. Sometimes it gets people fired up a little bit, and they think that's what we're proposing. It's like, no, this is... It's to start your conversation.
It's like the street going through the neighborhood.
Exactly.
You know, once James is right, once you get people going, then they're going to say, oh, wait, how does that affect my property? Or how are my kids going to get to school if that occurs there? And, you know, it's really helpful discussion. They may not realize it, but it helps us write a code that fits better.
Mm-hmm. You know, and it's funny is, you know, people say, well, you know, we're at Lapine's not going to grow that much for the next 20 years. It's slated to grow by 1,000 people inside the city limits. You know, but it's very funny. And I gave this example when we went through the comprehensive plan is when I started working for Deschutes County in 1993, I was the South County planner for about 2 to 3 years. And I was commenting to Deborah right now, the subway is now in its third location that it's been in Lapine. I did the review on Newberry Hotel and was amazed one day when it burned up.
So you actually worked for the county?
I used to work for the county.
Used to work for the county. Mm-hmm. So what?
I left the county in 96.
Do you live here in Lapine?
No, I live in Bend.
You don't live here in Lapine?
I live in Bend too, and I also used to work for the county, but that was in the late 80s.
So, just clarify, you're the board,
we're
or you are the consultants.
Yeah.
Got it, see?
So we do
not
the
know that.
There you go.
Okay.
Yeah. We're not
so
stuck.
You are helping them come up with the plan.
That's right.
Got it. Okay. It's clear now.
Guidance and experience.
Pardon?
Guidance and experience.
And they know the legal aspects.
Well, and some of it, I think, too, is being consultant. We live here in Deschutes County. I mean, you've been here, I don't know how many years I've been here. So I'm in my 18th year here, and I worked for the county and for the city on the private side, the public side. And I say that because people, when you get them engaged, they tend to think, oh, nothing's really happening right now. Well, but, you know, I remember back before any of those things that I was talking about were here, and it starts to, over time, you see your community develop. And so everything, each little piece is important. So, I don't know, it's if you
well,
can
I've been
help
here 64
engaged,
years,
yeah,
and I remember when a sign on BAM said 8,000.
Right.
That's the lowest I remember it, so.
That was an outdated sign.
You've been here a long time.
I've only been 61, but they didn't replace the signs but about once every 2 or 3 years.
I think it's cool when people remember logs in the river. That's my favorite.
That was how I got up to duck hunting country, but carrying a shotgun in a backpack across those babies.
So people thinking that the Lapine is not going to change are all wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, look at, we can get new people coming in here and they want it to stay a small town.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. But we need to be prepared for it.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's all we need to do is be prepared.
In comparison to other cities, your growth is not going to be as great. So it's really important and a wonderful opportunity to put some standards in place just in case you do get some unexpected growth. nothing's worse than having, you know, regulations that don't fit the environment. So it's a good time to plan. Mm-hmm. So should we jump into site code?
Sure, we can go through each one of these codes. And we're, I mean, again, we were talking earlier, there's no substitute for reading the code because we can explain a certain amount of
it. Just because I mentioned signs, you can go through it. I really didn't know what to expect.
Okay.
I didn't know.
Well, I think tonight, the dry stuff, I think we can put aside and let's really focus on the things that are more tangible, more mm-hmm. physical in nature, and that's going to be zoning, lighting, and signs. So out of those three, and we're gonna put in the lower order procedures, land division, and SDC mitigation. Does that sound okay? And if somebody has a specific question, we can come back to those. But those are the ones that are the most technical, and the others are the ones that you're gonna feel more tangible. So I think I'd like to do this. I'd like to start with sign. And then go zoning and lighting. Does that sound good for everyone?
That sounds fine.
Okay. All right.
As long as you don't read the whole thing.
I'm not going to. It's going to be very high level because we've heard from so many citizens about signs that I can kind of put it in a nutshell. People feel signs in La Pine are disorganized, cluttery, and there's not a consistent enforcement of signage. Have I said anything that's not
true?
Okay.
True.
All right. So what do we do? We know things can't change overnight because that wouldn't be fair to businesses. And some businesses believe their signs are appropriate, that they made them, they spray painted them, or they spent money on them.
In Bend, what is their, and I know we're not going to copy them, but use them as a guide. If you have a business, mm-hmm. and I was giving a talk in Redmond yesterday and kind of looking at some of the signs. So the little placards they put out in front of the business, if that sign is on their business property, is that okay with...
If the code allows it, your property's allowed to put signs somewhere within the boundary of the property, but not in the right-of-way. And there are a few exceptions.
I'm talking all of the sandwich signs I see yep. everywhere. One of the things that bothers me here in La Pine... in Gordon's two malls that he has.
Mm-hmm.
He has the big signage, and it might say Radio Shack and Hunan, but then out on the street, I think it's repetition. I don't think they need to have those signs mm-hmm. there. It's very messy. I don't see why we need to get redundant about it.
Right.
I know they want to draw attention, but if they have the big signage.
Right.
Very expensive signage. I think that's what's causing a lot of the clutter.
The movable signs. Gotcha. Okay. That's a good point.
Well, it's what I hear, but now what I'm hearing, and I hear everything out of the nursery, trust me. Now everyone's saying if they can stab in a little sign somewhere, it's going to be grandfathered in before you get a sign code in.
Not necessarily.
Well, I wouldn't think it's going to happen.
If it's established legally and the standards change to, say, if you were going to do a new sign, it's different design, different size, different location than what they had established legally, meaning they got a permit through Deschutes County, they can leave it. It's grandfathered. But if they're just putting up signs,
mm-hmm.
like the sandwich signs or, you know, that are not legal, they don't meet any standards.
But why
didn't
they have one for Dairy Queen that's down the road? It's just put in the two befores.
Mm-hmm.
Or Motel 6 that's down the road.
Oh, I see what you mean. That sign that's like 3 miles from here, you'll get to Dairy Queen.
Well, did they go through any sign code to stick those two befores in there? Or did they just go to the property owner and say, I'd like to put a sign here?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They probably just did it and didn't go to the property owner.
Possibly.
They're going to say no.
I don't know, in the county sign code, in most cities, those off-premise signs are not allowed. You're allowed to have a sign on the property
right.
for the business of which it's advertising. And,
right.
and only in special circumstances can you do those. So, as you drive up and down the highway and you see those signs, probably 99% of those are illegal signs.
Right, but we don't have anybody that enforces it.
Not now.
No.
And what this code intends to do is to streamline what's allowed and make it easier for the city to enforce something when they have staff or a special arrangement with the county or some other agency to do that. So let's to summarize, it's a big mess now, and over time it'll get cleaned up. It's not going to be easy. There'll be some bloodletting because people are very attached to their signs. But one thing we're going to do in this code is examine when things have to change. And in Bend, and I'm sure you remember this, Bend started off with like a 10-year window for things to be brought into compliance. And then it was extended because of either the economy or they needed to give more time to
people. And those were things that were permitted legally,
yes.
But the code, the standards
were
changed.
Right.
And it was
heights, all kinds of different things.
Exactly.
And we can't permit movable signs where people walk because it's not fair to our disabled population. Mm-hmm. And so on that basis alone, we have to keep the sidewalks clear for everyone. And so that's the first one that's the easiest to implement. In some cases, signs are allowed in the right-of-way in special circumstances, but very rarely, very rarely. And usually it's because it's tourist information or it's giving some traffic information. So the bottom line is the sign code will help clean things up. It's not going to be overnight, and there are going to be some people who are very concerned.
I've never put one on Highway 97.
Mm-hmm.
And Bob Morrow, I worked with him for years, and he said as long as they're not visible from the highway. And then also, he said he's been there so long that he just maybe kind of ignores it. But I don't know what else to do about mine, but I draw the line at putting one out on Highway 97. Mm-hmm. I have it on the corner of, and I'm not even here to, I'm not worried about mine right now. But I don't know how else to direct traffic down there once they get off the highway.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how many businesses we have here in Lapine that are off the beaten track that need signage.
We could check.
Within the boundaries of Lapine.
Yeah.
But you're so far out of the boundary.
Right. My sign is within the boundary, but I'm outside the city.
That would be an off-premises sign, is what you'd be trying to design and have it legally established.
Exactly.
And you'd have to lease some property from the property owner.
I have gone to the county, or ODOT, I don't remember who does it, to find out about one of the directional signs.
The blue signs.
The blue signs.
Mm-hmm.
And because I would need it on 97, there's already one for the cemetery, there's already one across the street, I didn't qualify for one.
Yeah.
But back to, I'm more concerned about on Highway 97,
mm-hmm.
how we can clean up 97.
There's, and all your points are valid. There's one thing that was brought up in previous meetings about what alternatives might exist for billboards and things locally that could direct not only citizens but tourists and visitors to different aspects of Lapine. So right now you've got a billboard, big icky square, giant pole. Serves a purpose though, lets the traveling public know where to go. But it doesn't do much for other activities in town. So if you had an alternative, which would be a travel information kiosk, maybe half the size of a billboard, with a nice sloped roof, a place where you could pull in to look at what amenities are available in Lapine and what services, and a map, that would be a nice alternative and get at the billboard issue without completely eliminating the service that billboards provide.
Mm-hmm.
So we've talked about that in previous meetings. And there are some examples that we've provided visually that we'll talk about in future meetings, too. So I want to bring that up because I want to get a lot of support for having a reasonable approach to limiting billboards. You can cut them off completely. That's a choice. You can allow them without restriction. That's a choice. Or you can be somewhere in the middle.
Billboards, you're talking
the big
Carlson sign company has them.
Okay. Middle has them, too.
Well, Ben still has them, don't they?
They have a certain number that they allow, and they're rotated through the community. So, like, 24 allowed, for
example. So they've taken some down?
Yeah.
Because you just can't go out and get yourself a billboard.
Sandwich signs, I mean, I'm sitting here thinking too, is that it's always, a lot of businesses rely on those, especially businesses that aren't on the highway, to direct people off that main thoroughfare to, you know, here's where you can go. Either for advertising or just purely for location, locational direction type of services. Those are two different things. But most communities just say you can't do it.
And they leave it 24 hours a day, 365
days. And it comes down to enforcement. But, you know, what I've heard in other communities, and I'm hearing again now, is businesses rely on those to get people to their business so that the business is successful and people make a living. So I think to just get rid of those is like, other than the kiosks like for billboards, is there some other way to do, and maybe you end up with another sign that's not advertising the business on that property, but you do an aggregate type of sign that for those businesses that are located, say, off the beaten path. What it does is you end up with another sign, but you get rid of all the clutter of all the different little sandwich signs. Most communities just don't do that. That's the key of this, is you can include something like
that. My concern about that is that we seem to have businesses popping up that they make those signs. And so those businesses then were taking away from what they could do. And I'm not saying one way or another. I'm just acknowledging that fact. And
I guess I don't understand what you're saying.
Okay, all those little signs that say you can have a sign in a day, someone's making those signs.
Sure.
Well,
and that's, well, I'm just saying that now there's not just one.
No.
There's
all the way to Highway 97 now.
Well, it seems to be that we're getting more and more of those businesses making those signs. Mm-hmm. So I guess what I'm thinking is when we do the sign codes, that we should be approaching those businesses and saying, here you go.
Yes.
You're selling these signs. Mm-hmm. This is the requirements, and you should be making people aware of that before, I don't know how we do that, so that people don't come back to them and say, you sold me all these signs and I can't use them.
Those are temporary signs. They're made to die.
Well, they are, but I guess what I see in Lapine is more and more of them are using them as...
Well, we'll send the code out specifically to the sign makers.
I think a directional sign is totally different than the type of signs we're seeing along the road. Mm-hmm. They're advertising what they do within that business. Mm-hmm. And I keep referring to mine. Mine just says L&S Gardens Arrow. Mine's just a directional sign. Mm-hmm. I will show them what I have when they get there, but I agree with you. Those shouldn't be on the highway.
Well, that is a concern. And I think that more of them are using them, more businesses are using them, because they're convenient, mm-hmm. they're cheap, and they...
You do, but Deborah's, I mean, you use the word some bloodletting.
There will be some.
It goes with the territory.
And those are going to be tough choices. I mean, you, the Planning Commission, make the recommendation to the council, who it becomes a tough choice, because in these types of issues, you have... The reality is there's codes in place right now that prevent that.
Right.
And so enforcement is the real issue.
That's exactly it.
So what happens is people are going to say, don't prevent my business from being successful, my business making signs. Mm-hmm. Don't prevent that in the code. And the reality is it's already in place. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So what does Ben do about directional signs?
They limit them, and some are exempt.
Even real estate signs.
Oh, now I...
Even arrows that say open house.
Not legal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You can have them up during the 4 hours of open house, but you got to have permission from the owner. It can't be set in the public right away. It's got to be picked up off the private property that puts the arrow. And some subdivisions don't even allow them.
Right, I knew
some
that.
Some don't even... you got to have the sign code for the exact subdivision to make a specific sign for specific subdivisions.
Well, and also I read recently that Redmond, for example, because they were having all that work on the road, that they were letting people put out signs for advertisement purposes to let people know that they were still open.
Mm-hmm. No, temporary signs here.
Yeah, those are totally
different. But what I'm saying, though, now they're saying you can still have that sandwich sign in front of your business, but you have to pay us $50 to do it, because it's licensed then.
Yep.
And we'll do the same thing in a reasonable way. There has to be a fee for managing the code.
Mm-hmm. And then they have to follow certain regulations.
Yeah, and you can break those regulations. If
out
you think
there for X number of hours a day.
Yeah, if you think sandwich signs are okay, you can limit the size. You can limit where they can be placed on the sidewalk, for example. You can limit, you know, the hours, colors, lighting. All that stuff mm-hmm. can be regulated.
So they can limit the size of a directional sign.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Any sign. Sure. And in different zones, the way the proposed code is set up is to recognize that residential zones have different needs than commercial zones. Mm-hmm. But we're making it pretty simple, because I think when you fracture a code too much, you defeat its purpose. So commercial and industrial, pretty much the same. I don't see a need to restrict industrial when it's part of your community in a visual sense. And as your city grows and matures over time, what you're going to find is that you're more interested in the physical nature of how things look than the separation of uses just because of a zone. So for now, I think commercial and industrial keep it pretty even, Stephen, but in the residential areas and along the highway, you have to have different standards.
When I did the sign in the little park, the New Lapine sign, I tried to follow the Ben's pretty much sign code.
Mm-hmm.
So many feet off the highway, and
yeah, the setbacks and then
exactly,
the height.
Exactly, exactly.
The illumination.
Hoping in the future it would meet your codes that you came up with,
mm-hmm.
Because there were some ideas of some awful stuff
yeah.
they wanted in there.
Now, this is a good point to talk about what is protected under free speech. And I need to talk about it because it always comes up. It's pretty straightforward. Free speech is protected under the U.S. and Oregon State Constitution. So when we regulate signs, we don't regulate what they can say. And in some cases, there are other things that are protected. But for the most part, whatever it says, we don't care about. We just care about time, place, and manner. So when the sign is in place, the shape of the sign, and where it's located on the property. And I might have doubled up on one of those, but time, place, and manner are the things that we can regulate. We cannot regulate content.
How about, I'm just thinking of it in terms of because you get into the size of signs.
We waited for you, but we started anyhow.
You can join us at the table.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Off-site directional signs that has the name of the business with an arrow is one thing. But then if you expand that sign to include, here's all the services that we offer.
I would think no, if it's a directional sign.
It's like a menu.
I would like to see and do something with a directional sign. Business, that way.
Mm-hmm.
And then up to how I'm in there under conditional use permit and have a certain size sign, I can say something on that sign once they get to the business.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I would think the directional signs maybe need to be a certain size.
Yes.
That's how you limit the content, by the
way. Exactly.
If it's that small, yeah. You can't read it.
Yeah, but if it says exit this way with an arrow, that serves the need.
The need, yes.
But if it says, you know, grilled cheese and tomato soup today.
And then you'd probably get into, if someone was putting up a directional sign, you would hope that it's directing you to a business that is a legitimate, that it's zoned for what it's doing.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want all these signs going somewhere where they haven't enter to the zoning laws.
And that's probably the bad thing that comes out of making sure that we adhere to just time, place, and manner and not content, is that there'll be some things you don't like. And it's going to be this percentage of the total. But if we stick to not regulating content, we're going to be safe legally, we're going to reduce costs for the city, and not get into these legal snafus that can easily bankrupt a community when they're arguing about signage and content and all that.
Mm-hmm.
So for sign codes, there's a lot of history, and you can Google online sign code lawsuits, and you'll find a plethora that will talk about how cities have gotten into trouble and it's when they've started to regulate things that are related to free speech. So we're going to avoid it and make things simple.
Good. I've watched so many people that they feel that especially with the temporary sign, if they just get enough sign, they can turn a profit.
Okay. Okay.
Or that if they got such a funny name on their business,
okay.
The business doesn't say what it sells. They'll hang because they invented that name. They will hang on that.
Mm-hmm.
One of my brokers years ago came in with, she'd listed a beauty parlor, and it was named Charjo's. And it was on a marquee sign, Charjo's. It didn't say salon. It didn't say hair. It didn't say nails. She said Charjo's. She couldn't understand why she went bankrupt in a year. She thought by having a cool name, she had it all. And she wanted to put a sandwich sign out front, but the landlord of the complex wouldn't allow.
Because they're not allowed.
Ben, I keep referring to Ben, because I'm sure we will try to follow. Maybe.
Some, but really not a lot.
So
we don't keep it clean.
Can you, I always thought you couldn't have a sign anywhere other than on your own property, place of business.
Mm-hmm.
So you said something about, or renting a piece of that, another landowner's piece of property.
What you have to get in your head, and this is different from sign codes in the past, and a lot of cities have been able to get away with it until there's a lawsuit. We don't want to go there. Essentially, each property, wherever it is in its zone, is going to be allowed a certain percentage of signage, whether it's by square feet or a percent of a wall face or something like that. So think in your mind, if this is a property, and we've got all kinds of little properties throughout the community, each property is going to be guaranteed some form of signage. And we're going to regulate that signage. And that's all we can do, and it's all we should do.
Each property or each commercial piece of property?
Each property. Residential zones are allowed certain signage, and they're mostly related to either a home occupation or for sale signs, or political signs, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
In the commercial zones, it's a pretty wide open thing. And we're going to merge industrial with commercial. There are going to be different standards for along the highway, because that's a different kind of treatment than what you might find on Huntington.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we have to key it to what's important in Lapine. Now, when you talk about off-premise signs, very slippery slope, because what is an off-premise sign? You don't know if it's off-premise unless you read the words. And that's content regulation. So we have to be very careful about that. And because there have been so many land use cases and law cases and lawsuits about regulating content, we're going to have to accept that somebody could buy a piece of property from their neighbor and get an extra sign that says X. But it's still regulated by each property getting a certain amount of signage, and then that's it. How you use it is up to you.
Okay. But I think part of what she might be referring to is a lot of these signs are in the right-of-way. They may not be on the sidewalk, but there's grass and such in between the sidewalk and the road or whatever.
And 99% of those are no
the signs. Okay.
Yeah, that's a problem.
So
we'll have to find alternatives.
Is that kind of what you're referring to?
I think you're talking about both. But
And in a lot of jurisdictions, it's either, I mean, they're just not allowed. So, and it gets back to, I mean, if we're talking real estate, and you know, if you want that primary frontage and you want to be visible, then you lease a property out right on the highway versus a block over. And the lease rates reflect that.
Mm-hmm.
And the volume of your business reflects that. The question is, what do you want to do with regard to signage? And because I keep hearing, we don't want to see all the sandwich signs directing people down the street. But then you don't want to. You still want to provide some options for those people to have a way for people to find them.
Right.
How do you do it?
And that's why I don't understand why ODOT.
It's a very difficult thing.
Doesn't like any of the, like you said, the blue signs that people look for directional signs,
mm-hmm.
that say like you're on the freeway and it says.
No, it's not that they don't like them. They just have rules for them.
Okay, there's a little picture of like mm-hmm. McDonald's and.
Dairy Queen and blah, 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 that you know if you turn up here and you get to the end of that stop and it says this way for these guys and this way for those guys.
Gas and lodging.
Yeah, exactly.
Because they do that because it's related. A lot of those things are travelers, being travelers' services.
Right, okay.
Whereas, you know, and people are traveling down the highway and they need to know. Mm-hmm. They do it so... You know why they really do it? Is they do it for a safety reason. Mm-hmm. So that people know to get off rather than they're rubbernecking and they go off the road.
Okay.
But for something like a landscaping business,
okay.
People may want to find it that don't live in the area, but it's typically not traveling from California to Washington and you stop off and say, hey, I want to buy some plants.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's the reality of
okay,
it.
So that's
how they do it.
Because I had just had one when I went into one restaurant that was like way off the beaten path and it's no longer open anymore. Because of where they were located, but they had said that they couldn't advertise on Highway 97, saying turn here. Mm-hmm. They may have been able to if they'd
taken
a step
farther. From what I understood, because I submitted a whole big packet and I've done it twice, they keep encouraging me to keep doing this. You only have a certain number within a certain, and we already have one for the chamber, visitor center, the cemetery going this way, and they're just. Mm-hmm. Is there room for another one?
I think we've got a good idea of the things we like and the things we don't like. But one of the things I want to talk about and make sure I get some feedback from you guys on are electronic message signs. In other states and other cities in Oregon, you'll see them. I think the one we're probably all familiar with is in Eugene. It's at a car dealership. It has, you know, I want to say Go Beavs, but I think that would be wrong. Go Ducks, and then it has, you know, for sale this, and the weather and the time, and sometimes it has funky messages, and it rotates back and forth. In Eugene, if I remember correctly, that's a non-conforming sign. It's been there a long time.
Mm-hmm.
What we try to avoid are a lot of flashing signs because they confuse drivers.
Visual moving. BNDOT did those years and years ago.
And I think we're on the same page to say that time, temperature, and perhaps emergency weather is pretty much all we want to do.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see a need to message more because I think it's confusing.
Mm-hmm. What about boardings?
He has that existing.
That may be non-conforming after the
and also
in place.
Some of the restaurants like to flash what their special is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But if we make a decision... to focus on limitations to electronic messaging, is that a good thing for Lapine, or do you think the door should be open to allow more of what you've seen with Gordy's and the restaurants?
I think it's distracting. I have caught myself veering off as I see what the special's going to be, where the ones with the temperature and the time, I think that's all we need.
Okay.
I think it's a good point. I think it's too much
and
distracting.
If I remember correctly, it is one of the few things that we're allowed to regulate content on because it says something.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe there is strong legal support for limiting that. I will double check on that, though.
Mm-hmm. So with Gordy's approval right now, once you enact ordinances, his approval... basically is not approved anymore?
No, it would be a legal non-conforming use. He could keep it as long as he kept it as it was originally permitted.
Mm-hmm.
He could have it for the next 50 years.
And would he have to come back to the Planning Commission here? Or?
No, I mean, he could have that unless you put some type of sunset clause in here. Exactly, then if you were to change it, then it would have to conform with the existing rules. Or if there was a sunset clause that said, okay, we changed the rules, those aren't allowed, and within 10 years, those need to go away.
Remember when the big signs with the arrows, and they had all those big light bulbs?
Mm-hmm.
Everyone was using them.
Mm-hmm.
Very distracting.
Well,
and they have cube billboards, too, where if you think of a cube, four sides, you know, on a column, and you get four messages out of one billboard. We're going to limit that kind of motion. So you can't have that. We don't care what it says again, but we're going to limit that physical feature.
Well, that brings up, I mean, two other, I'm just jumping in here, sign code, some of the biggest issues that I hear people talk about, one is the type of lighting. Do you have backlit signs where you have the plastic face, and the bulbs are encased in the cabinet, and you know, it's those fluorescent bulbs like you have here with mm-hmm. the sign face across the front of it. Or you do something where you don't have the backlit sign anymore, and you have lights projecting on it from the front.
That doesn't fall under ODOT?
No.
On the highway?
Local sign code. So you end up with these big bright cabinets, or you end up with like a bulb projecting on the sign.
I went to ODOT when I put in the new Lapine sign, and I couldn't have it veering off the highway. It had to be certain. It couldn't interfere with cars, mm-hmm. the visibility.
Well, we're looking to see what ODOT's been doing specifically in Lapine, but generally that they're looking at their right-of-way and things that keep motorists on the road,
yeah.
and then the county regulates everything else. But what James is talking about is remember when we said time, place, and manner? The manner of the sign is you can have lights shining on the sign, so it's an open bulb, which is typically frowned upon. You can have halo lighting, which is the letters are cut out and the light kind of is a halo around the letters. You can have a plastic sheet where light comes in from behind, mm-hmm. or indirect lighting. There's neon. There's a variety of things. Typically, from an economic standpoint, backlit signs are the most cost-effective. What we don't want to see is exposed bulbs.
Right.
I think everybody would agree with that. Neon, done well and in limited amounts, is highly effective, has low wattage, and is really a good thing in some cases. It can be overdone like anything else.
True.
But we're going to advocate a variety of sign types and get away from glaring bulbs or anything that flashes unnecessarily.
Mm-hmm.
Does that sound reasonable mm-hmm. to most
mm-hmm.
people?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And that will also get rid of the up lighting for the dark
skies. A lot of lit mm-hmm. signs here in Lapine, maybe.
You do it at night, you'd be surprised.
Yeah.
Yeah. You'd be surprised.
Yeah.
When we get to the lighting code, we've written it in a very harsh way. It's a total night sky protection. It's one of the strongest ones that we're bringing forward in all these codes, and we've based it on Pima County in Arizona.
Right.
And they have a very strong night sky protection ordinance. And we're going to start there. If we need to loosen it up, I'd rather do that. And I think when we get to lighting, you're going to go, maybe that's too strict. I'll have to think about that.
Well, so the city of Bend adopted them, and so has the county. And the counties have been in place for about 12, 14 years now.
Mm-hmm. This is stronger than the county.
Did you find out how much one of
that's
those
great.
Measurement devices.
Patty did. It was like $500.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's not that bad.
For the level one.
Yeah. For a candelometer.
Yeah. So now you know your night job. No, I mean.
I have a night job. Thank you.
<It's> yours.
Okay, so we've moved through electronic message signs. One other concept I want to talk about with you, and if we just talk this whole meeting about signs, we will have done a good thing. But I want to be efficient if we can. There are times when you've got a small shopping center, you mentioned one earlier, and you can do a piecemeal method, which is a signs come in. If you're allowed 500 square feet, you get to place it here and there, and if you get to 500, that's it. As an alternative, small shopping centers and large parcels can go through what they call a business plan or a comprehensive plan, where set sign areas are made available on the buildings, and then as people come in and out of lease spaces, the signs change within that set area, and it's not a mishmash. It doesn't fluctuate, mm-hmm. it doesn't move all over the place. That's one alternative. It doesn't give you maximum flexibility, but it gives the community some predictability, and it makes shopping centers look better.
And
that's one choice.
Begins a style.
A style.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good way to put it. The alternative is piecemeal, come as you go, and I'm slanting this conversation because I want you to say, yes, the business plan sounds good. But that's pretty much what we're recommending is for shopping centers that choice be pushed as much as possible.
So for each business that they want to sign, then would the committee or that sign has to be a certain size to conform mm-hmm. with every other one in that shopping mall.
Yeah, or be in its place. That when the shopping center comes in, we know where the walls are, we know where the windows are, we know where the driveway is. And we're going to say within the driveway, you can have two directional signs, you know, in and out, typically. On the wall, you can have so many square feet, and it's got to be here.
For the name of that business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for whatever's in that shopping center. And again, we don't care about the name, just here are the spaces where you can put signs.
But what about that shopping center that does the big sign?
That's part of it. You could have a ground-mounted sign in addition to your wall signs.
Okay.
And along the traveling major highway.
And then once they're getting rid of all those little... Mm-hmm.
It would help with that.
Right.
Yeah. Can't those promise, but I can.
Those will last longer than you'd expect.
Well, the Aspen Alley sign, because I go get my nails done at Joseph's, and I can't stand the way Gordy does his thing, and it's plastic, and it blows, it's so cheap looking. So it would be nice to have a business type, but enough space for everybody, because he's got a lot of stores in there over there.
One thing that people always forget is most of the business is local.
Mm-hmm.
Not all of the business is generated by somebody on their way to Seattle or Spokane or San Francisco. You can forget them. They want food, water, restroom, gas, and that's it. They're gone. It's the local people. The local people always know where everything is. You're local after you got lost a couple of times and asked for directions. Pretty soon you know where everything, every place you're going to shop and buy and be a customer, you know where it is. You can take down all the damn signs and you walk in the right door, I'll bet you.
Oh, yeah.
And it's, but it's a perception that I've got to have signage. If I have signage, it's profitable.
Yeah.
And that's the fear. If we give up our signs, we can't make a profit. And yet, if they looked at their customer base, if they, today with the computer, they can do that in a push of a button.
Mm-hmm.
85% of the trips that go up and down the highway here, and we just from other projects work on, are local trips.
Mm-hmm.
15% are pass-through trips.
Yeah. I used to do the count in Bend. At Safeway, before the Parkway came in, 45,000 cars a day there. And when we put in the Parkway's beginning in 88, people wanted to not have the Parkway, but keep the streets for people. And I go way back to when Highway 97 was two ways in front of the Tower Theater. Those merchants down there got confused between traffic and business and customers. They thought that when, in 64, when they moved the northbound traffic to Bond Street and made Wall Street two ways south on 97, their businesses would fold. I listened to those merchants. I was in business there. And it was terror for them. They just knew that they wouldn't be profitable. They'd have to sell their business or they'd have to retire and lease a building. Who now wants to lease a building? It's not going to make the money.
Such a good point. So why do we need the barbershop sign out there? Everyone in town, the tourist isn't going to stop and get its hair cut.
True.
So everyone in town knows where the barber is. They know where the Chinese restaurant is. So a sign just on their building.
It's given them all they really need.
Right.
But their dream is success, and their success is people.
And you will hear the sign companies fight that a little bit because they'll think of volume versus its quantity versus quality. But they'll regulate themselves like they did in Bend, and all of a sudden the prices for signage will be reflected in a different way. So instead of getting five signs for $5, you're going to get one sign for $25. You know, it's going to even out.
Yeah.
And so I'm not too worried about the economics. We're not going to put anybody out of business. There's a lot of data to support what F just said. And if you do good signage, it works a little better.
And if you treat everybody the same, equal, and nobody has a sign,
right,
like the little sandwich signs, you still have to get your hair cut.
Mm-hmm.
You're still going to go.
But until it was put in that perspective, I would think, you know, if I was in, oh, I've got to have a sign out on the highway, who's going to find me? But when you think about it, it's only the locals that's going to.
The guy from going to San Francisco.
He's not.
Yeah, you're down there.
No.
But don't we hope in the future we're going to have shops where people that are traveling, instead of having everybody go through 97, stop in the fine? I mean, the future.
Yes, and that's something I wanted to point out. I want to come back to the map, because this is your comprehensive plan map. It looks out further. It looks out 20 years. And if you remember, for tourists, we're going to have some services in the main core, but we're going to focus on this area because it links the open space. We can have, what was the name, the Lapine Wayside? On the map,
Ranch Slide.
No. We had a great name.
Wayside.
So people were at these. Where is that? This is the OSNC land, and it is, let's see, what's
the Ranch Slide's over here.
Where do you have it? It's.
We're doing a sign for the different.
Just directly below
them.
And it's a big open space right now.
And for Roslyn.
So what we talked about in the comp plan process was we want to have tourist people have good services here, but have a place to safely stop. So if we have a facility here with a pullout, and we've got restaurants and shops and gas and information here, we will have done something that's not only recreational, but serves the tourists and encourages more people to stop. So that's one.
Is that Burgess or is that?
No, that's
okay, so then in the green area.
Pinpoint where it is.
That's out there in the trees. You're in there.
It's those trees.
You're north of Les Schwab and all that stuff.
Okay.
Before you get to Caldemo.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a good place.
And then you walk out, they'll still be on the 97 and not going around. So their proposal to go around.
It's an alternative to having people get lost. They're going to be focused in a particular area, and it will generate the kinds of revenues that you'd expect for tourists and services. So it's something that I think would be good there. Okay, I want to make sure we're getting through this, because we have a short amount of time. So we did talk about elimination, and we're kind of on track there. If a sign is deemed unsafe, we're writing in some language that allows the city to remove it. And that means if it's blocking a pedestrian way, or it's falling over into the right of way.
Not maintained,
flapping in the wind, it could come loose.
Are you going to incorporate any kind of a warning notice?
Yeah.
Who's going to remove it? Is that when you have your own enforcers here?
Yeah.
Eventually.
A traffic accident at that spot.
Yeah, there you go. Snow will take care of it in the wintertime.
I know, isn't it amazing what snow clearing can remove?
Plowing can get rid of a lot.
Okay, I've talked enough about signage. Those are the basics. Time, place, and manner. Specific signs for specific zones based on shape and material. What do you want to do next, James?
Zoning is always because that's what you can and can't and how you do it on your property.
Okay. If I run out of air, you're going to have to jump in.
Reach water.
Zoning is pretty much along the same lines. You've got different zones in the community, and there are standards for what you can do in each zone. And
we don't have anyone regulating the zoning right now.
You do. Deschutes County does a fine job of regulating what happens. But it's something that is more specific to when the city was unincorporated. So now that we're incorporated and we have more of an urban feel over the next 20 years, that's what we hope to accomplish, we have to have a zoning ordinance that matches.
It's a matter of, every time we have a meeting, we get those questions. There's the code, there's the rules, and then there's the enforcement of the rules.
Right.
And what we're doing is drafting those rules that, in the county, you'll go through the permit process, and they'll review your development proposal and make sure it meets the rules. But it's then the continual years down the road is the follow-up to make sure that development is still following the rules that were established when it was permitted originally. And that's what it's always the biggest issue. It's not within the purview of what we're working on here, the actual enforcement and the administration.
It it will be dealt with, but not by us.
It's just one of those things. I've watched it in Bend over the years with the landscaping. You know, we have a great subdivision with landscaping. They put in sprinklers, they put in trees and everything. The sprinklers never last past the first year.
What is landscaping?
And the landscaping, if you put working grape, it'll last forever. You know that. But everything else, they have to periodically replace. And nobody goes out there and says, okay, your place looks really ugly, unless somebody's got a cause.
Yeah.
And that's the code enforcement, and I really believe that that needs to be dealt with in that manner.
But and more of an upfront approach. I'm sorry, but you know, developers respond to timelines. And if we say, you're not going to get your occupancy permit until things are paved, the landscaping's in, and you have XX and X, you know, people will move on to the next project. So we have to have things complete before occupancy. That's a major theme in this code. And it also is something that we're toying with the idea that maybe we need a bond to maintain things over a certain period of time. Other cities do it.
Sure.
Yeah. It's a management issue, but it's probably a good one. So, you know, that's something that will help with the enforcement. Is deal with it up front and do what you can so it doesn't get out of hand.
Towns here in Central Oregon do that?
Yeah, to some extent.
Yeah.
Do they?
Mm-hmm. Typically for public improvements, sewer, street, and water. On-site things that are more of a private nature, probably less. But it doesn't mean you can't. Okay, I want to talk about our 9 zones. Within Lapine, we're going to have a variety of residential, commercial, and industrial zones. And I'm going to just read through them so you know what they are. Single-family residential, pretty straightforward. That's most of the city that you see developed. Multifamily residential means exactly what it says. It's not just single-family, but it allows for greater densities. Residential master plan. These are areas that are typically designed a certain way, designed as a neighborhood with certain amenities. Traditional commercial, which is mostly what you have today along the highway. Then mixed-use commercial. This is a trend we heard about in the comprehensive plan that if you want to build a complete community, you start with complete neighborhoods. And that means instead of seas of homes, you have places where people can get services at corners and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's mixed-use commercial.
Not Walmarts, but like the little services.
And that falls in the same with neighborhood commercial. It's the matter of size that makes the difference. Transitional areas. You'll see the crosshatched areas in certain areas.
Down here.
Seems to point those out.
Right up here.
Where zones need breaks. Instead of having one zone group be across the street from another, you're going to have transitional uses that ease the change. Industrial areas, and then the forest. Now, in the comprehensive plan, we've recognized we have a lot of forest in BLM land. And we've also put in policies that say majority of that land is going to be set aside for large lot industrial or energy production uses. When I talk about energy production, it could be biomass, it could be solar. It could be a whole variety of things that we may not be contemplating today. But if we focus those large areas on things that benefit the community without benefiting an individual, we're going to be better. So sewer expansion, energy production, large lot industrial, because they produce jobs. And that's it. 9 zones. Each of those zones allow things based on setbacks and use and heights and all the kinds of things that you'd expect regulated on a property.
How about on the residential? You've got a lot of people operating little businesses out of their house around here.
Yeah.
Would that be
We would have some regulations about home occupations. And if people have an existing commercial use in a residential area, they may find that they'll either be allowed or they'll be classified as a non-conforming use. And that's what we talked about before.
Mm-hmm.
It recognizes the historical nature.
It's like little teeny like embroidery businesses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, most of those are all
like shooting traffic.
Typically the code will allow those types of things.
Yeah.
What it does is it limits the degree to which you operate your business from your home so that it doesn't change the character of your property
right,
from residential to commercial. And what it's really saying is, we hope you're successful, operate your business from home because it allows you to save money, grow your business. But once it grows to a certain size, then it might be time for you to move to, you know, a commercial area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, real business.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly, because all your neighbors now are living with these mm-hmm. traffic impacts, deliveries, things like that. So
they're fixing cars or trucks in residential areas. We know mm-hmm. who that
yeah.
is.
Yeah.
And I hate to bring it up, but it was brought up in earlier sessions. I mean, I only talk about it for 2 minutes, and I'm restricting everyone to the 2 minutes. Livestock. We've had a lot of complaints about properties overutilized for livestock. We're going to put in provisions that have maximums, that you can only have X number of animals per acre. And we've got to start limiting that. We're going to transition to it, but suffice it to say, we're going to try to help out some of the citizens that have been overburdened by living next to really concentrated livestock areas. That was 60 seconds.
What was the time period you're going to give on that for transition?
Oh, it was a note. It was 6 months.
We were talking about 6 months.
Yep, 6 months.
Then we need a Humane Society here.
Well,
type people.
We allow that, but we can't force them to locate mm-hmm. here. So it's allowed in the zones, but mm-hmm. but we can't force them.
Ben actually has cattle on
still
lots off of 8th Street.
4-H projects.
Quimby.
Yeah.
And it used to
but
be.
But that was there, Goodrich and all those have been there.
I know, but yeah. That's the only one that's left is the old Goodrich place. Uh-huh. But mm-hmm. all of them on that side, even where the fancy subdivision is, yeah. Dr. Donnelly's, he raised Black Angus on 16 acres.
Mm-hmm. Over off of 8th? Over off of 8th Street?
We're not talking 16 acres. We're talking acres.
Jones Road.
We're talking an acre. Or half an acre.
This piece isn't 16 acres, I don't think so, but it's in the middle of a neighborhood.
Yeah.
So it's the plan.
But it's been there forever.
Forever.
So mm-hmm. let her do what she wants.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody else moved in later.
They did.
That's like that mill over in Prineville. Everybody's complaining about the sawdust. Yeah. They built the houses after the sawdust was already there.
There's a little more history to that, but I'm not going to go into it. There's a fascinating history, so see me after the meeting.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
So if a person right now had a complaint about a particular zoning, you could go to the county.
Correct.
And they have someone that would enforce it?
Maybe.
The code enforcement is a separate department. And you can find that on the internet. And tell
code
you
enforcement.
Code enforcement.
They've been avoiding it, mm-hmm. honestly. Wanting to enforce it in the city limits. So they've had some limitations that have not allowed them to do the best job down here. And because we're in the process of incorporating, some of it has fallen by the wayside.
Well, on the dog issue, because I called on it, because I was kind of wondering, you know, as brokers, we have to be careful about dogs. Because that dog issue is not considered criminal, one dog biting another, they don't enforce it unless it's a criminal nature.
And land use is separate from what the mm-hmm. sheriff does.
So it's not enforced.
Yeah. So
state statutes.
But eventually, let's talk about how it would be enforced. And in the classic sense, you have a zoning ordinance. You're going to charge a permit for processing applications like the county does. And you're going to be in charge of those revenues. And a portion of those revenues collected should go to fund code enforcement. And your fee, when you establish your fees, a portion of the fee has to be set aside for code enforcement. And if your fee's not high enough, you're going to have to make it high enough. Mm-hmm. And hopefully the code is written so that it minimizes ambiguities and things that require a lot of people time. And that's important because we want to make sure that when you apply these codes, it's like a checklist. I've done X, X, and X. I've submitted this, this, and this. Therefore, I get approval. And that's the cleanest, easiest way to make sure your citizens are treated fairly. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're advocating. Keep it clean. And then you'll have fewer enforcement problems in the future.
If think one of my big concerns is you come into Lapine, which I'm calling Wikiup Junction, mm-hmm. part of Lapine. We've gone from selling cute bears and whatever. Now we've got a small log mill in there, which mm-hmm. I feel ought to be over in the industrial park, in light industrial. I don't think a commercial zoning is any place. Yeah. And it looks awful in
where
there.
Is it, where is it at again?
Right on Highway 97.
I
pulled all the... You know, it's owned by two separate different people. I have all the papers on it, but I'm not finding any.
They keep adding.
Now we've got a small log mill in there, and I've been in real estate and understand, mm-hmm. you know, all these zoning and everything. I just don't think it's appropriate there. But I can't find anyone that is authorized to make a decision on if this falls.
Really, the county?
Well, it would be the county land use staff.
Yeah.
They have to tell you, one, whether the use is permitted,
mm-hmm.
and if it's not permitted, what processes are available to you mm-hmm. to do code enforcement.
You can look that up on the internet and dial, because it'll say on the land use whether they've got a permit to do what they're doing.
And it isn't that it's bothering me, it's we live here, and I think what the whole goal of all of this is to make our town, a lot of our people coming in through on Highway 97,
sure.
we want it to start looking better, or all this work you're doing is for naught.
Mm-hmm. Right, and just don't forget, it's going to take some time.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to happen overnight. The value of land, and you all know this, the value of land will get rid of some of those things over time too, because it's just not cost effective to have that low impact activity on high-value commercial land. You know, it will change over time.
Do you remember McKinney, Oregon, at the south end of Bend? Well, he was. Mm-hmm. This is the guy that was kind of between Deschutes River Woods and Homestead Way
mm-hmm.
over on the west side of the road, and he sold junk and he did all kinds of... It took years to get rid of it.
Really?
Because the owner of the property had let him do it. And he'd established a use, this goes way back 40 years ago. But finally, he got sick. And one time when he was sick, a bunch of people gathered together and removed everything.
Really?
In the dark of night. And he was going to sue the city, but nobody knew who did it. Because the people who did it wouldn't tell on the people who did it.
Well,
that's excellent.
That was my opinion. Well, we've got flea markets by Wikiup, and then Barbara, I guess she's thinking... Because I saw, like, stuff outside, and it's like, oh, my God.
What's that?
Over next to the, what is it, that little motel over there by the insurance company.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we want to beautify it.
Well, this, the zoning ordinance is the key to all of that.
It is.
Mm-hmm. And the sign ordinance right hand in hand with it.
Mm-hmm. The physical things that we all feel. Need to talk about cell towers and wireless telecommunications. How many of you have a cell phone or a computer? Everyone?
Yes.
Okay. So,
several.
It's an essential service anymore. The question is, how do you do it and where do you do it? And the technology is getting better and better, but essentially the technology that we see more of today requires line of sight. So we have to have some height to these things. And we have to accept that it's really going to be part of our community. If you say no, then the services that citizens expect, and emergency services as well,
mm-hmm.
Will be limited. And so we put in some language in the code that defines where and how those things can be developed. It's not everybody's cup of tea, but we would sure be complaining if we didn't have the service.
Oh, definitely. I would say, I don't know how that's going to affect me, but all my customers, a lot of them on the other side of the counter, have moved here. It's amazing how many of these work from home
mm-hmm.
for big companies
yes.
in California all over.
Right.
So that's something we have to
yeah.
have to keep.
Nobody wants it in their backyard. But I don't have to have it.
I want a tower.
You want a lease?
You want to lease your land?
I do.
And I want to, you know, get some money here.
Make it look like a tree.
You want a good reception, go to Christmas Valley.
Oh, yeah.
I'm serious.
Oh, it's good.
We're talking
flat.
Internet and
but that's
everything.
What it is, right?
They've got everything down there. It's a local
okay.
quality. It's clear from Bend to there. San Francisco or China.
How are we doing so far? Sounding okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right, we're on the right track.
Now, all of this is online, right?
Okay. And it's in draft form.
Mm-hmm.
Patty graciously has made some CDs.
Oh, cool.
Now, these are rough drafts. They're changing every day. And as soon as we get the next version, we'll get it on the website. So these are limited in value.
What's the website change? It's on?
The city of
Lamont.
On
your site.
There's a notice on the front page, and then there's a link to all of these.
But I was just going to note that, for example, on pages 21 through 25, it gives condensed information about each type of...
Are you printing that?
Well, we have it, but
yeah.
Each type of zone, for example.
The chart.
So it's easier to see what's allowed in what zone. So if you have any questions, it's like, okay,
yeah.
Those are what we're looking at specifically for each zone. And we've actually made a couple, little changes, but...
It's the handy book.
Yeah, so I just thought, so you don't have to read the whole thing, but it does have some highlighted areas.
Yeah, you want to look at heights and setbacks and lot coverage, things like that. Okay, I'm going to leave it there. I'm going to be mindful of our time. Should we move on to signage? Excuse me, lighting.
Do we have to do signs again?
No, I can't.
Oh,
yeah. That's for the next meeting.
Hang on. Okay. Now, hopefully I'm saving you from having to read a lot. But generally in the lighting code, we're saying no exposed bulbs, everything shielded and directed down, and that there's an actual limit to the amount of lumens. That's how you measure light. That can come off of your business or property. And essentially, we don't want you creating glare onto other people's property. We want to be very sensitive to the fact that light pollution is a serious thing, and I can't find anybody who likes it except for the police department, because they believe that lighting things helps reduce crime. And in some cases, they're correct. But in a residential neighborhood, having somebody's... Mercury light.
We have that all over.
Into your bedroom is not so great.
Mm-hmm. So we're going to try to limit that too?
We're going to try to limit those. Security lights for businesses, probably a little different story. But in the residential areas, more stringency. And all because we want to protect the night sky and protect property values.
And that seems to be a big issue. There again, I deal with a lot of people that are just have bought property here,
mm-hmm.
have bought property they plan on retiring, and when we did all the lights along Huntington,
yes,
the lighting project, I had one customer, I didn't even know what he was talking about,
mm-hmm.
and it was very important to these people,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
that we watched the lighting.
You get sensitive to it. I mean, I've only lived in Bend since 84. But there's a dramatic difference in the number of stars I can see at night.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
And Pine Mountain, the local observatory has had difficulties and can't do what they used to do. So, you know, it all adds up. The glow from Redmond and Bend is visible. And you know, we kind of hope that Lapine doesn't encourage.
Mm-hmm.
This thing.
Very good idea.
See, and you'll get some people that complain about it. But for new development, whether you buy this fixture or this fixture, and this one complies and this one doesn't, you can find them all in comparable types of cost. And if you put a provision in here for retrofitting, again, that sunset clause, within 5 years or 10 years, your non-conforming lights have to conform.
Mm-hmm.
Many of those can conform just by adding a shield, or if you had on the front of your house one of those fixtures with the glass all around it, or like even a jelly jar light.
Black
spray paint on the sides of it, so it comes down below the bulb, so that the light comes out the bottom of the jelly jar,
mm-hmm.
and you, for 50 cents, you comply.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So you know, so that compared to signs, which cost a lot to put up a new cabinet,
mm-hmm.
These are things that I'm just throwing it out there as you think for in terms of do you want people to have to conform within a time period? This one is much easier.
Yeah.
There are some extremely harsh things I've put into this that will generate discussion. We've talked about. Prohibitions, mercury vapor lamps, fixtures and lamps, the installation sale, offer for sale, lease or purchase of any mercury vapor lamp for use as an outdoor lighting fixture is prohibited.
Good.
What's
going to generate some steam?
What does Mid-State put up on the properties?
Those are a different kind.
They're aimed at, they're not like the old ones. No.
We're also prohibiting laser source light. The use of laser source light or similar high intensity light for outdoor advertising, entertainment, or projected above the horizontal is prohibited. So big flashing things.
I don't have too much argument about that.
Okay, good. I won't go any further.
Okay. For show.
And the same for searchlights. Ixnay. Not going to be allowed.
What? No circus in town.
Well, there's exemptions for things like that.
I think when we have our last council meeting, it is so dark when it gets dark now early, and as you're going to 97, there was actually some teenagers coming across. Sometimes you can't see. So I'm actually on the opposite as far as driving and safety.
Well, but that's, I know, a long time from now as far as lighting on 97.
Intersection lighting and directing pedestrians to where it's safe to cross.
Oh, yeah.
That's
and they don't,
a different thing.
They don't cross where they're supposed to, and they don't, you know, it goes.
And we have an interesting video showing kids crossing at noon to get to McDonald's.
Great.
It's an all-time favorite. That's pretty much it. Now, in your lighting code, there's going to be a chart that looks highly complex and mathematical. And that's because it measures light. And there's only one way to measure light. And we put that science in here. So we're going to, like I said, there's going to be some steam generated about some of these things. But as we move through the process, maybe we loosen it up, maybe we don't. We're going to see where the public sits on it.
Well, you better get a bigger response than what you got here tonight.
Well, this is pretty typical. Once we start having the public hearings, we send these codes out to sign companies, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Lighting companies, there are going to be plenty of people. I'm not worried about that.
So, Don, are you on this committee?
No, I'm just sitting here
as a council. You two are the only
We have five, and so you're using the grant.
Mm-hmm. To hire you two
to draft the codes.
And so it sounds like you've come a long way.
These drafts, from the information we've received tonight and in previous planning commission meetings, we're going to make some modifications and then get new drafts out. That's how the process works: is continual refinement.
What's your goal? When do we want to have some ordinances in? And I realize it has to go to the city council.
I'd like March. I'd like to be all done by March.
Cool. We have first hearing scheduled for November 17th with the Planning Commission.
The Planning Commission.
Changes to the code that we've drafted based on what they feel is appropriate from the public. That will finally get refined so they're all satisfied. They will make a recommendation that these are the documents that we want to forward on to the City Council for consideration of adoption.
I read the population.
Then the public hearing process starts again in front of the City Council. It's a two-step process. And the council will hear some of those same things and essentially decide whether they want to accept the Planning Commission's recommendation as is or make further tweaks or refinements based upon the work they do as a body and what they hear from the public. And then ultimately they adopt it and it goes to the state for acknowledgement.
Can I ask you a question?
Mm-hmm.
The city is having a table in the celebration over here tomorrow and the next day. Why couldn't we take some of these over and hand them out?
That's what I was saying.
That's why James made those for you.
Yeah, was to take them.
I don't think that's enough. We ought to go. We can get some more here.
I have
a bunch right here, but I assume that we'd be able to make copies and stack them up and take and bring them over there.
Yeah. And
where do you want them returned? To the City Hall?
City Hall, and then they'll get them to us.
Yeah. And do you want just this? The question
is... I think both, no, it has to be both of these. This is what we're doing. This is the intent.
Right.
And then these are some questions we want to know to have you help us refine these. So I can give you these.
Well, I know personally for me sitting here and just listening to some of the things you've said, I probably would have argued with them until it was explained. So I'm hoping if people have more of a, they're going to attend this instead of just talking out of turn and not really know what they're talking about.
Well, we'll do additional notices to generate some activity. And you know, that's a double-edged sword, but we need people to come, and it's, you know, that's what public outreach is all about. And we start off, I mean, you know, this is a lot of paper. If we were to do it and say, here it is, no changes, that wouldn't be good. So we start off with something that allows modification and refinements so that we incorporate your concepts. And tonight we've covered a lot of territory. We have a little bit of time, but I don't think it's critical to go over land use procedures or SDC mitigation right now. Land division, I'm going to leave that to you.
So, okay. The land division code that we have in here governs how you divide property, how you make, you know, one property into many properties. And in short, there are two basic types of land divisions. There's partitions, where you take one piece and you divide it into no more than three total pieces, and you create...
You're talking commercial property?
Any type of property. Residential, commercial, industrial. It has nothing to do with what the zoning is. It has, except for as the zoning dictates what the lots, minimum lot sizes and lot sizes are. But just the division itself, partitions create, take one and create it to no more than three total, and subdivisions, just different terms, create
and you're gonna
lots.
Be changing it. Okay.
And it's a land division where you create four or more, four up to thousands if you know, depending on your first size of your property. there you go. And
well, just it's probably the world's largest subdivision.
There's nothing.
It's about 77,000 acres.
Yeah.
But it's not worth much.
No.
You just stay there.
Yeah. Come here for the
business. But it's funny.
Christmas Valley or Crooked River Ranch? Christmas Valley or Crooked River Ranch?
Crooked River Ranch was such a good one.
Okay. Crooked River Ranch.
Crooked back.
Probably.
But there's two things. There's two things in the land division ordinance, really. There's two components of it. One is all the technical stuff that the state requires you to put on final plats, and you know how you survey it, how you describe the properties, you know, all that legal lingo, so that when you buy a piece of property, you know what you own, and you know that it has all the services available to it for development. The second piece of it is the actual design standards. That when you do a subdivision, you're creating roads, you're creating water and sewer lines, you're creating, you know, all the infrastructure to serve those lots. But those design standards, the first part of that, the legal lingo from the state, is pretty definitive. It's just there to protect you when you buy a piece of property. The second part, the design standards, those are very different and subjective depending upon the community that you go to, depending upon what... We talked yesterday with the Planning Commission and Lapine. One of the big issues is, do you want curbs? Because there's a lot of snow removal and it becomes an obstacle during the winter. Whereas if you're in Madras, you don't have that issue. But, you know, the good, so there's the positive. But without curbs, people pull off the road and into the, across the sidewalk or into the ditch, which isn't a good thing. But with the curbs, you can kind of direct how that, you know, you retain people to a certain area. So there's pros and cons as to how you do that in your community, and those design standards are based upon, you know, community sentiment and some of those physical factors like that. So, but the biggest thing when you're doing land divisions, that when you look at this code, is that the city gets the ability, and working with all the other agencies, in this case it's Water Sewer District, which is not part of the city, fire departments, police departments, that the infrastructure that is serving that subdivision is adequate for the degree of impact. So that if somebody creates a 100-lot subdivision and it's going to generate 1,000 trips a day, and there's a gravel road that serves that, well, that whoever's developing that may be required to pave that, put in the curbs and sidewalks and bike lanes, so that is adequate for that degree of impact. Same thing with water and sewer. You have to make sure that if I'm going to build water to this subdivision, that I'm not, that there's adequate water supply, that I'm not reducing the water pressure over here for this subdivision. So the land division code, again, protects you from all the legal, you know, the legal lingo protects you as a property owner. The design standards are really malleable depending upon your circumstances, and overall it is there to protect adequate public infrastructure for everybody in the community. Now, I guess that's a really quick overview, but that's pretty much what it does. What I would expect you hear more comments on, and tell you as a public and planning commission, is I'm thinking like when I redid the land division ordinance in Bend, one of the biggest issues was how wide should the streets be through residential neighborhoods. Historically, they had been 36-foot wide streets. You park on both sides, and there's room for both two cars to pass each other while there's cars parked on either side of the street. Separation between houses, and many people like that. But also what that does, it creates the racetrack that you were talking about. When you have narrower streets and cars parked on both sides, like through some of the older, really old sections of Bend, you know, thinking because everybody gave these examples, you had to kind of pull over and wait for somebody to go by. See, all of a sudden, you're driving really slow.
There is no parking on the road. I think it would slow people down if there was people.
Over Huntington.
Exactly.
No, I'm talking about Preble Way.
So, you know, those types of issues, how wide should the streets be, we went on for 4 months. You know, ultimately, what we decided on were standards that the streets were narrower than what the standards were narrower than what they had been in the past. They weren't as narrow as what a lot of people would have liked, but the basis for that was, what are the minimum widths that we needed to get a fire truck down the street?
Exactly.
And the cars were parked on both sides.
You betcha.
And you maintained a 20-foot width.
And if one car is in the way, the house burns down.
Well, it is. Or, you know, if a car's, you're right, parked in front of the fire hydrant, I mean, they will smash out your windows and they will run that hose.
Well,
take the fire hydrant to the pumper truck.
Did you do that?
So, you know, and there are a lot of demonstrations. I mean, a lot of people. And so, you know, and other standards are, you know, on your wider streets that carry more traffic, how wide should the lanes be? And you'll see a lot of, you know, should you have medians? Those types of things. All of those amenities, if you get what, you know, we call the Cadillac amenities, cost a lot to maintain and a lot to develop as well. So there's trade-offs. If you want, you know, the best, you're going to pay for it, and maintenance of that over the long haul cost you a lot of money, too.
It can burn you.
It can really burn you.
We've seen some examples in Bend where, for many years, the comprehensive plan required medians on streets, but it wasn't enforced. And we didn't need to do it. And then later on, when we wanted to control traffic a little more, it got overused in areas where it really wasn't needed. A good example is Mount Washington Drive.
Well, so drainage is another issue.
And so, you know, all of this comes back to determining whether it's going to have an impact on public subsidy. And that means, do you want your tax dollars going to a Cadillac version, or do you want to have something that's kind of middle of the road and gives choices to people and doesn't impact the city's budget in a negative fashion? Right now, one of my clients in Bend, city said, we're not going to maintain your median, and we'd like you to just concrete it, 14 feet of concrete with a 6-inch curb, or 12-inch curb.
Skateboard heaven.
And it would look horrible. So, you know, the developer had to pony up money to maintain the median and pay for the water for that, whereas the city used to do that. And then those costs go what? Into housing prices. Now, that used to be the rule. Now, today, you know, the economy's all out of whack. But the thing is, you got to be really careful what you ask for in those standards, because you may end up paying for it yourself in one way or another. So you have to be really careful, like James is talking about.
I was in one of those subdivisions that you pointed out that has parking on one side of the street. Everybody's got a double car garage, and the street is so narrow that two cars can barely pass, and they can only park on one side. I sold a house to a guy, but he lived in one of the houses, and they put two cars in their driveway. I had to park in a vacant house across the street without a for sale sign. It's a competitor. But I park my car over there and I walk across the street to talk to them, and that's really inconvenient when you're having a party.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Barbecue, Sunday, family room. Well,
you're right, and some of that is the, you know, your, the key, though, is to have enough flexibility in here, though, where you have choices.
Mm-hmm.
Because some people would say, I never have a party, I never have company, I never have great with that.
Right.
No one's in my neighborhood.
The condo, that's why they invented them.
But, you know, and I think of, and I gave a couple other examples yesterday, is I always, you have the zoning ordinance and you have all the other ordinances, but when you look at that map, the land divisions really provide the framework and the fabric of your community. They determine the lot sizes, the higher density areas, the lower density areas, the street connectivity. Do you have gridded streets or do you have cul-de-sac streets? You know, so I don't know. I'm just a weird planning geek, but I look at the land division ordinance as rudimentary as it is in all the legal lingo, is those designs create the fabric. Every subdivision starts with the design of the streets and the lot layout.
Mm-hmm.
And I gave this example to them yesterday, is that if, you know, early part of the century had gridded neighborhoods, that's just how you design them. You get to the middle part of the last century, you had cul-de-sacs. Cul-de-sacs off of the collector, off of the arterial.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of all the traffic being, now we're back to the gridded streets.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of all of the traffic being dispersed evenly throughout the gridded street, gridded network neighborhood, you had nobody driving down the cul-de-sacs except who lived there. But then when you got out to the collector and the arterial, it took you forever to turn because that's where everyone's driving.
Yeah.
So there's the pros and cons. Yeah. Like a little bit of traffic in your neighborhood, dispersed evenly, or nobody, and then you sit forever and you get on these big busy streets. So, you know, there's trade-offs, but none of them are right or wrong, because, I mean, if you're selling real estate, you know people that probably say, I would love to live on a cul-de-sac neighborhood.
Yeah.
And other people say,
I'm going to
make gridded streets with alleys now. So,
and
choices.
There are choices, and that's the most important thing, and we went through a time period in Bend where there was very strong opposition to anything except what they called new urbanism. And new urbanism was really old city planning, very small blocks, very narrow streets, houses thrust real close to the sidewalk. That's a choice. It doesn't mean it's right for everyone. And so as planners, we resisted having one thing shoved down our throat versus having choices. We didn't always win because sometimes it's a political decision.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the Planning Commission and City Council will face, is where is your community on these issues? And typically, it's good to have choices. It's really difficult to have a style that drives your city in terms of how you design subdivisions. So you got to have the choices. Some you like, some you don't like, but the majority will be in the middle.
You know, and I think of it in terms of if you had a gridded street subdivision or a cul-de-sac subdivision, the things that I think that affect your livability more is not one or other or the other of those designs. It's what we talked about yesterday with regard to what I have drawn up there, is that we can have a gridded street subdivision with a straight street, like what you see on the left.
Mm-hmm.
That becomes the speed thoroughfare. People drive, you know, if you create a design where the street between blocks has a little curve in it, all of a sudden people slow down, it becomes safer to walk.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just simple things like that compared to the big designs.
Well, it makes it more interesting.
Mm-hmm. One other thing that's gotten lost over the years, that's the word alley.
Of course, you love alleys.
When Ben was back in the teens, everybody had an alley and the garage was off of it.
Mm-hmm.
And the street was 28 feet wide, maybe, and you could park two cars and still have room for two to pass.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That worked.
Now, you go back that far, go back further, and the way they decided, I'm forever out of Ben. Seven generations now.
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow, they decided the width of the streets by the room it took to turn a horse and buggy around.
Oh, that's what they do in Prairie
City. I've never seen a horse and buggy.
Prairie City has the big wide streets, and that's how they.
That's exactly why Prineville has those big masses of pavement. But today, they can't afford to maintain them.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you do? Now, this is one interesting thing. When you've got a wide street, how do you retrofit? Well, in Prineville, it's really hard to drain things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, water table's high, and it's an old floodway itself. It sits in a hole.
Mm-hmm.
It's an old swamp.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what can you do with those big roads? you can take the middle, open it up, that's right, and make a place for natural water to collect and use natural grasses and vegetation to serve as a low-cost median that has a multiple purpose. And that's one interesting way you can take those big monster streets and get them to work for you in different ways. But right now, Prineville doesn't have money to pay.
Curb extensions, ball belts at the corners, things like that, that would work on the street like yours. You know, like if I took...
Part of the problem, too, is that it's such a long stretch before you hit another street.
If you did a ball out, you had a mid block kind of bulb out right there.
But everyone likes to slow down. Those make for some real interesting plowing.
Well, no, it does for plowing, but it also, like in downtown, where they've done it in Bend and they've done it in Redding.
Yeah.
It slows down the traffic. Everybody's looking around. They're rubbernecking anyhow.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I like to see those things.
Mm-hmm.
They're not the hazard that when I was 97 and it was 25 miles an hour and people drove 30 right in front of the tower and it stopped at Franklin.
Mm-hmm.
Go.
So on land division code, I mean, the thing to focus on is if you're reading this, the first 15, 16 pages are really all those basic requirements under the state law. The end of it is where we've proposed some standards, and we've proposed some standards that are actually middle of the road. They include street sections that, for your residential neighborhoods, just throw them out there as a generality, that are typically narrower street sections than what you have today. And that would be for new neighborhoods. We've proposed curbs and the like in there, but that may be something, you know, given some of the circumstances.
I did that with the Newberry neighborhood when I was on the County Planning Commission and trying to get their design standards, was to consider the word snow.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a problem in Redmond. It's a bigger problem in Bend, but it's a hell of a lot bigger problem here.
Mm-hmm.
And so runoff is a consideration. Yes. Melting is another consideration. Mm-hmm. Roof heights, sloping is another.
Yeah.
So we have a draining, I mean, when you're doing subdivision infrastructure, because we have the snow, then it gets slushy, then we have the lakes all over. So is that something, you know, if you were having a developer come in, or is it Lapine 2 level that you didn't think about?
No. It's you can deal with it. The question is, how do you want to deal with it? Do you want to deal with it naturally, crown a road and have it go into the side ditches with no curbs? Or do you want to have curbs that direct it to community storm sewer or drainage swales?
It could still go in a ditch, but you have these breaks that direct it into the ditch.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but again, it becomes, then you can control cars where they go,
mm-hmm.
and the drainage. But if you have so much snow, then how do you even push it up over the curb? Mm-hmm. The curbs get broken out and it becomes a maintenance issue.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Cement cracks here.
Sure. And you know, I've seen plows take things out that mm-hmm. I never thought would come out.
But you didn't like.
Yeah. Yeah, I mentioned that one.
Are we ever going to get into a consistency on storefronts, on any of the building?
You eventually will, but that's a little too much at this phase. Mm-hmm. In the comp plan, they talked about theme, and in terms of livability, how nice it would be to have, you know, everybody have a certain design review.
Mm-hmm.
Right now with our economy, that would be something I would not recommend at this time. It costs a lot to do those things architecturally.
It takes generations to accomplish it.
Because these
buildings that have only been built in the last 10 or 15 years are going to last 100 years.
Mm-hmm. If you were having a very, very high rate of growth, I think it would make sense to include a design review section in your code.
So that it didn't get too far advanced that it couldn't be fixed.
Correct. There's different ways to do that. I mean, like if you go to Sisters, they have a Western theme that you have to incorporate.
Sponsored by Bruskin.
But you go to some other communities, like, you know, it was back in about 96 or 97, that Bend put a design review standard in place. It didn't require a theme, but it required things such as, if you look at a lot of the commercial buildings, that now they have peaked roofs on them. They have, mm-hmm. make sure that you have certain architectural elements, so you don't have any big blank walls facing the street. They have to have windows and doors and openings and landscaping so that you're not driving down this tunnel of bricks and mortar, you know, that buildings don't turn their back on the street. There's some life. So that's a whole nother way other than mm-hmm. developing a theme. similar to signs, design standards would have the ability, I mean, you're dictating art, so to speak.
That's true.
it has the ability to bog down moving these documents forward for adoption, because it's some of the most controversial, you know, one man's or woman's treasure, another person's
treasure.
You know. Mm-hmm. So I'm just throwing that out there. I think that you'll get some development. Maybe you would like it to look otherwise, but you will have time to develop that.
Got more trees, like Dan Verker wants. Maybe we don't want to be like Sisters, the Western, but maybe we want to have the pine trees. I mean, because some of the stuff is so barren, and it'd be nice to have like trees or something. Whatever.
I don't know who owns it or who developed it, but it was back when I worked for the county. There was a building. It's the Homestead Tavern. I don't know. It's a block, rectangular building with a shed roof on it.
What is it?
Right up on Billy Buter.
Right.
It's next to Flick World.
No.
It's by William Block. It's behind the
But I did a review on that. It's a concrete or a mason block building. It's a rectangle. It's about 1,000 square feet, and it has a plain shed roof. When you look at that building, it was built, it was function over form. You know, the question there, and I'm pulling it out as an example, it's not the most attractive building that you can have developed in your town. It works.
Yeah,
you know, it can look beautiful and you're still going to have the same use inside. The key there is a finite, you know, there's a line between how much does it cost to build something that's a lot more attractive to the point where people don't build it and the business doesn't come to town. So that's what will bog down.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I
can
see that.
And government, it's easy for governments to make regulations, but the best governments lead by example. And as the city looks at spending money on its own buildings, if there's really a theme that the community mm-hmm. wants to do, build it yourself first. Set the tone, mm-hmm. set the example. And if your taxpayers want to go in that direction, then you know, do it yourself first. And that's political to say that, but it's good governance to set the stage. And I think Bend has done a great job. I'm thinking mm-hmm. of the city hall before the current city hall.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they used brick, mm-hmm. Stone, you know, various roof types. And it's a good-looking building. The older one was good-looking, too.
And the fire stations have been mm-hmm. built, and the police station that's been built are all... There's always that fine line between people point the finger at government waste. But you're building these edifices that are going to be here for 100 years, and they... add permanence and trust in your government.
Yeah.
So.
Mm-hmm. I mean, if you build a bomb shelter and then ask everybody else to build a log cabin, you're not going to have much, you know, credibility.
Well, like South County just put a beautiful new green sign. City Hall doesn't even have a sign out there, I don't believe.
You have South County Services building.
But that's what it says,
City Hall.
Does it say in the fine city hall?
If
you haven't read it, it's close enough.
Yeah.
Without comment.
Just the last month.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
It's a nice shine.
It's a nice one.
Okay, are we good?
Mm-hmm.
Any last questions? The next meetings will do more to engage various aspects of the community on different topics. And then hopefully we'll meet our schedule and get these babies done.
I'm going to leave these. Patty, or if you want them, so have copies, you can go.
I'll come down to City Hall.
Okay.
And really, I mean, tell everybody to come to these meetings, you know, rather than just at the hearing, like, you know, shows up.
I had to get my information from Ted Scholler. He mentioned at a realtor board of directors meeting, and I said, give me a copy of it. I want to be there.
They did made the frontier. The Wise Buds didn't put it in, but the frontier was here.
Well, this can I be on your mailing list?
Yeah,
well,
that's how I
heard.
I
wow.
The mailing.
Email. Was this an open house or open meeting? Because open house is generally people come in and they should meet.
It's
kind of like a
meeting. Okay.
In an actual session, not in the back.
It's just in the, we're in the early stages of meeting
schedules. One nice thing about this is if you go to every
place,
there's
a lot of people
that reside there where they have a different draft business or whatever. They're going to be affected on it, so that would be passed.
Definitely.
So James did a great job on that.
In 1997 to 2005, I worked for the City of Bend.
I bet there's not a ton of ranchers somewhere.
Well, I'll be down.
Yeah,